Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, I want to mention our monthly guidebook slash workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass, so if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit subscribe in the header, and you'll be good to go.
That being said, let's trek further down the path of
caring about the crowd.
Who cares about the crowd? Why do we need to do that?
Well, hopefully.
What crowd?
Well, that's
this is kind of the point. Post-COVID, I think, right?
No, we're still in it.
Actually, not at all. Because this is like recorded stuff too. This is like albums. This is live streams. It's essentially a guide to creating stuff that people actually fucking like, right? Is that kind of what the vibe is?
Well, let's just see. So today we're going to shine a light on the audience, right? And how vital they are to the success of any musician. You know, this is especially true in our current COVID chaos apocalypse that we're in. And musicians don't have the same opportunities to reach spectators and fans, and the new ways of live streaming are not a perfect substitute for a live performance with people, right? Live streaming is great, don't get me wrong, but I doubt anyone would argue that it's a better way to connect with your audience than being in person with them. You know, live music is still more captivating. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah, and especially certain genres over certain other ones. I mean, I would think like it's way cooler right now to see like Taylor Swift from your living room into her living room playing a live stream as opposed to like a fucking stadium where you can barely hear anything. Although that's like has its own energy, right? Like a huge audience is pretty fun to be in. But for like jazz and stuff like that, for the more intellectual based art forms, like being in that room is everything.
Yeah, but regardless, the debate between live music and live streams isn't really what we're going to talk about here. Basically, however you are reaching your audience, whether it be in a club or an album or a live stream or whatever it is, you have to think of the audience as much as yourself. And I think that that's where we're going to start here.
Yeah.
Imagine that you're a pizza shop and you've opened this up and you have this great idea and you're like, I'm an artist and instead of marinara sauce, I'm going to use anchovy paste as the base for every pizza pie, right? Every pie here. I'm probably from New York because I'm saying pie, right? They don't do that everywhere. Pizza pie.
Whatever. People try to be like New York.
So you're just going to use anchovy paste as your base. And then instead of cheese, you're going to use grated horseradish, right? No cheese. And the only toppings in your shop are M&Ms and, like, let's say pork rinds. Okay, that's it.
I mean, can we at least do like roast beef if you can do some horseradish up in there?
Nope.
At least give it a chance.
No. This is the point. Damn. So like this is your unique recipe and it's your passion, right? And you're an artist and you're like, no, this is going to change the world. Like,
don't if do someone, this in New York.
If someone tries this,
they'll kill you.
Yeah. If someone tries this, it's going to change the world. And I'm going to stick to it. And I don't care what people say. I'm going to make this pizza, right? So I get it.
Are you describing Stravinsky? Is this going to go towards Stravinsky?
No, Stravinsky.
Creating a riot through music?
Stravinsky can make some great pizza. So we'll just talk about something else. But basically, it's awesome that you're expressing yourself through your food or through your art or whatever this case is. In this situation, your amazing pizza that's like just gnarly. But don't expect to pay the rent unless you broaden your offering, right, to reach a wider audience. Like first, You might want to get a red sauce instead of anchovy paste because like a vegetarian
could have to pay the bills.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like a vegetarian couldn't even eat it, you know. And then it's also disgusting, right? And clearly you need to make some other changes to reach a broader dynamic.
So you're basically saying like you can't just fully do whatever the flying F you want to do if you want like to actually have some sort of a viable career. Is that kind of where you're going with that? Like there are
I was just talking about pizza. I just wanted this episode to be about some weird pizza combination. Yes, no, that's what I was saying. So basically, you have to think of yourself either as I'm just an artist and I don't give a shit about paying rent or paying anything with my art, which is totally viable and cool. Or I want to make
as you have another source of income, and so you don't complain about it all the time.
Well, you're not allowed to complain about it. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't even matter if you don't have a source of income and you want to be an artist and you want to be in squalor. Like
buying your shit.
Yeah, you can't complain. But yeah, you don't have to have a day job. You could just be poor and be an artist if you want. But
that's important, right?
Because
this does get into like artistic integrity. And I feel like some people are going to be like, no matter what, you should never cater to people. But yeah, and you're right. If you don't have to cater to people and you could make it work, fine. But that's the push and pull of like the entertainment industry. But I feel like that's where the real artisan comes in, is like how do you do both?
Yeah. And you know, there's the history is littered with people that were brilliant at what they did and ahead of their time. And you always hear that they like died penniless. Like I think H.P. Lovecraft didn't ever make a living.
Well, he's doing great now. Everybody loves him now.
No, but I read this thing recently when I was looking him up, and I don't think he made any money off of his writings. No. You know, he spawned an entire culture. So, but he's the master of horror, just like Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, these guys were pioneers, right? And regardless, I'm just trying to say that there are times where it's okay to just stick to your guns. But, you know, I don't think that it would be great for someone, even if you're going to in the future be recognized as this genius, to complain that, you know, you're in squalor. You just have to either go for it or not. But we're going to kind of talk about what to do if you want to make a living and also retain your artistic sensibilities and not just feel like you've sold out.
Oh, I remember when selling out was a thing.
Yeah.
People actually could do that in the 90s.
Yeah.
Whoa, that ska band sold out. It's like, I wish anybody could do that now. You can't sell anything because it's all free.
Yeah, they signed to Capitol Records. They sold out, you know. It's like, well.
I don't think I ever said that, thank God, because I would just feel awful now if I ever said that shit back in the day.
Selling out, but, anyway, all this pizza talk and Stravinsky talk is, you know, let's move on. So this directly relates to being a musician. You know, I've known many artists, musicians that have said, fuck the audience, this is art. And again, that's a valid perspective if you honestly don't give a shit.
Isn't that what jazz means in Latin? From the Latin word jazz.
No, Jake, that means fuck the audience. That's not true. I mean, this is a valid perspective, is what I'm saying, if you honestly don't give a shit about making a living in music. But if you want to support yourself as a musician in this world, the audience is literally the ones paying your bills. It's not the clubs. It's not the record companies. It's not any of that. If it wasn't for consumers buying what you're selling, no clubs, record companies, or whoever would invest in you. Like, they wouldn't hire you because you're bringing people to a club or the record companies are selling your record. It's literally all about how you're relating to your audience, even if it doesn't appear like that. They're banking on the fact, all those people that are investing on you are banking on the fact that you're going to bring people to the club, sell records, bring something to it. It's a symbiotic relationship, and if you're not doing your part to relate to the audience, you're shit out of luck.
Yeah, they don't really care like what you think about philosophy and lyrics, and they don't give a shit.
Yeah, and I mean, house concerts are different in a way, but you know, people still have to call you for house concerts, so it's similar, you know. Someone has to want to hear your group, and if no one likes you, then no one's going to hire you. I know that's kind of harsh, but
no, I mean the same rules apply.
Yeah,
it's again, it's all entertainment.
So, how do you retain your artistic integrity while catering to the audience. Well, it's not as hard as you might think, and it's not a sellout, as, you know, Jake and I were talking about. You know, as a bass player, you know, when I was just playing bass all the time, 5 to 7 days a week, just bass player, not doing anything else in New York.
This is a bass soliloquy, isn't it?
Yeah. I just played by myself in the subway, and everyone said, what the fuck are you doing? Just playing electric bass? And no, I did not.
They wouldn't even use the bass for that scene in a movie. They'd still use a muted trumpet.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would just be you playing the bass, yeah. And it wouldn't even be in there.
No, it wasn't. I'm saying. I played with other people. But my point is that when I was doing shows, I always went by the audience's reaction and energy. It was literally, if the gig was good, it was because the audience loved it, and you could tell that they loved it. Maybe they would tell you they loved it, or they'd dance, or the energy was great.
Honestly, man, like, being a bass player is sort of a thankless job for that reason. It's like the audience doesn't even know that they're enjoying it so much, basically because of the bass and like what the drums are doing. Like, that's one of those things. Like, when you hear live music, if you just took the bass out, it would just suck. So, gratitude to the bass player.
That is the nicest thing you've ever said to me. It's amazing.
It's true, though. You know, especially live music, like that low frequency. But that's catering to the audience. Like, think of the role as a bass player. Like, think
the real role.
But like, think of what you can, if you physically can, like, do a bunch of shit. Right? Are you going to do that on the gig? No, you get fired. So it's like, you're actually, as a bass player, like, it's your job to sort of cater to the audience.
To show restraint.
Like, yeah. Because it is way more powerful that way. Mm-hmm. So that's like an example that maybe you wouldn't think of, but it happens all the time. And that's, that's awesome.
I mean, you have to serve the music, is what people usually say. They say, you know, I'm just serving the music. I'm doing what's best for the song. But in fact, I am serving the audience by serving the music. So as a bass player, maybe that's my unique perspective, and that's why I always thought of it that way. But literally, if I go to a gig and I'm playing and the audience doesn't enjoy it, it's no matter how good the band sounded, like, I'm bummed out, you know?
I think Lewis Hayes mentioned that in his masterclass. Like, he was talking about, because he was big on like the ride cymbal beat.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying something like, if you're playing and you look into the audience and no one is like moving or enjoying it, he's like, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. I remember him saying something like that.
Yeah,
I
was it
like,
has to feel damn. Good.
Yeah. Like, he would vibe off that fact alone, instead of like going where some musicians might go, is like, oh, well, fuck them. They just don't understand what I'm doing.
Right.
Like, they're not intelligent enough to know what, you know. He was just like, I'm doing something wrong. Let me try to fix that, you know?
Yeah. And we're going to get into that. I mean, that's true. That is the perspective that you have to change. It's not the audience's fault if they're not digging what you're doing. I mean, granted, sometimes there's a weird vibe and you feel like the band is played well and you got to brush it off, but you should always attempt to liven up the audience. Sometimes the audience isn't that live. Like, you know, you play a gig and you're doing the same stuff and the audience isn't really feeling it. And you know what? It is what it is, you know, but you never stop trying. You know, that's my point. It's like, you can brush off a bad gig and be like, you know, we gave it our all, but don't just tune it out and be like, all right, well, fuck them. I'm just going to play, you know, Stella in 13 and every, you know, and they're not going to be able to follow anything, you know.
You can still deeply down, like, enjoy it if all else fails, but, like, you know, you got to give it a go.
And getting back to the thing I was talking about gigging and whatever, being a bass player. This is one thing you don't want to do, is grade your own performance or the band's performance if the audience is having a good time, right? That's the other thing. Let's say the audience is great and they're hopping up and dancing and hooting and hollering. Maybe they drank enough. Maybe they just love it. I mean, whatever the case is, you don't want to educate them as to your mistakes, if that makes sense. Like, you don't want to tell them either literally or figuratively that, like, you missed the bridge or that, like, the tempo was wrong. Like, on the bandstand, you know, there's a lot of
communication. Like, if you're in the group and the crowd is, like, going nuts.
Yeah, but
you're like, we keep fucking up.
Yeah, like, the band is actually loose. Like, you're actually just having a shitty performance gig. Like, but the crowd is really digging it. Again, like, this isn't your time to educate the audience as to, like, well, you know, we could have done better. Like, you know what? Yeah. This, they're enjoying it. Just go for it.
Oh, dude, I've... Like, my uncle used to yell at me for that shit.
Right, but it's
like,
true.
Back when, back east, like, because I would never say thank you to people when they'd give me a compliment right. after a show. This is when I was coming up, like, playing local things. Mm-hmm. You know, people would come up to me and be like, oh my God, that was so me. You guys are so good. But, and I'd be like, yeah, you know, it's tough. Like, I had, like, my thing went out exactly. during the second set.
And they don't give a
and
fuck about
And my uncle would just
that.
Be sitting there yeah. looking at me and just shaking his head.
Yeah.
And he'd come up to me and be like, dude, just say thank you, you yeah. asshole. Like, they don't care about your pedal problems.
No. And they didn't notice it. And that's the point. It's like, yeah. it's, I've done gigs where the audience was just amazing. They were crushing it. They were just the best audience, all dancing. And then the drummer, for instance, would be vibing because he didn't like how something went with a sub or with something else. But the thing is, if the audience doesn't know this, then all you're doing is telling the audience that they shouldn't be that excited about the gig. And
yeah, like, something's wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong. Like, you should never do that. Like, you really should never give that illusion, because the thing is, you can have loose performances and it happens to everyone. And as long as you're not the guy after the gig, like Jake said, that's saying, well, you know, we've played a lot better. I mean, you see it last night. I mean, tonight, I mean, that trumpet player really sucked, you know? And
that actually reminds me of like a producer I worked with. He used to always tell us, and again, like, all this stuff, instantly your mind is going to jump to, like, oh, well, that's not, like, you shouldn't fake anything. You should just be yourself. It's like, there's a fine line between that. Like, he used to tell us, when you're on stage, and even when you're, like, in public after a show or before a show, if you're around people and you're, like, a band unit, he's like, you want people to think that they're missing out on something by not being with you. Like, you want to have a good time. Like, you have to just, like, have a good time with your band on stage, like, run around, jump around, like, be into the music, you know, and it doesn't, like, that's not necessarily fake. It's sort of just actually being present and, like, enjoying yourself. But that was a huge thing he used to tell us. He's like, you want the audience to want to be a part of what you're doing. That, like, goes a long way.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not saying this to say that you shouldn't go home and practice by yourself or with your group that you perform with and iron out all the things that went wrong. But the place to do that and to talk about things is never on the bandstand. It's never to do that. And I've actually, as a bass player, I've been fortunate to be hired by a lot of different band leaders. I was busy as a working bass player full-time for many, many years. And because of that, I got to see some of the best band leaders. And to be honest, I have heard numerous times someone on the bandstand, you know, call out a change or something like that and say, hey, you know, I need you to do this. And then maybe one of the other band members to say, no, well, you know, that's not... And as soon as you say, well, you know, it's not, the band leader would turn around and say, not on the bandstand, afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, right away. And that's the best band leaders you can get. Someone that says, talk about this later. This is a show. You know what I mean? And that is...
It's like arguing in front of your kids.
Yes.
Like, if you don't have to do it, don't do it.
Don't do it. Yeah.
Just don't do it.
So I learned a lot of lessons that way. But the point is, it's a show and people have paid to see you. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of different artists on this show. And I think it was... Man, who was it that we talked to? It was one of the artists on the podcast we talked to. And he said that he's never tired. Maybe it was John Ellis. Maybe it was someone else. He's never tired or feels lethargic or anything when he gigs, even if there's a massive amount of jet lag because...
Yeah, he's just so thankful.
Because he's so appreciative that he said, you know what? Like, it's my duty to perform at a high level and have that energy because these people... paid their money, maybe they got babysitters, maybe, you know, it's a,
like,
night
someone
out.
Flew me to Japan
exactly
to play music and a bunch of people were there when I got there. That's fucking awesome.
So this is the ultimate, you know, I mean, audience appreciation can go that far as to, like, you getting out of your shit. Like, yeah, maybe you can't pay your phone bill, maybe your girlfriend broke up with you, maybe, like, there's been a death in the family, there's all kinds of terrible things that can happen in one's life. But if you're playing, you have to be present with the music. And if you can't be, you might have to, you can take some time off. That's fine too. You know, if something tragic has happened and you're not all the way there. But typically, when people have bad gigs, it's not that serious. It's usually just them thinking about themselves or their own shit, or they're mad at someone else in the band, and whatever the case is, it has nothing to do with the audience, and they suffer.
Yeah, if Fleetwood Mac could get through shows, yeah, anyone can.
Or the Police. The Police were getting in, like, I think, what, didn't Stuart Copeland, like, break Sting's wrist or something before a show?
Dude, who got, yeah, who knows, all know. That shit.
Well, check it out. If you look at the definition of performer in, I don't know, whatever I did, let's say I type it in Google, it says, a person who entertains an audience, literally.
That's true.
It's like
that shit's kind of built in.
It's in the definition. Yeah. So if you were saying you're a performer, then you know, you're supposed to entertain an audience, meaning that you should give a shit what they think, right? It doesn't mean you tell the audience to fuck themselves and do what you want. That would be like busking, right? You could just go on the street and do that, and then people say, you know, you can
do it in your fucking room.
Yeah, like, you can do whatever you want to do. Well, I don't want to say anything bad about buskers. There's some amazing buskers, but I'm just saying that, you know, they didn't go to see you if you're busking. They're just going
by. Remember Busker Keaton? He was great.
Oh man, that's rough.
Another dude that like ended up dying, fucking penniless, dude. Buster Keaton. God damn. But that was for like other reasons, but Jesus, I hate when that shit happens.
But even if you're busking, if we go back to that, because again, I don't want to slight buskers. If you want to make money, which is the sole goal of busking, you're going to want to play things that an audience wants. Even though the audience didn't generally go to see you play most of the time, unless they know you're going to be, you know, in a park and they know you because you've done it before, you're still not busking for your own fun. Typically, you're trying to, you have a tip jar out, right? I mean, and you really give a shit if people like you.
You can look at it as like, you know, what a lot of comedians do is they'll try new material out at like a small club.
That's true.
So, and then when they bring it to the wide audience, they know it has a certain, you know, charm or it'll work. So you can use busking as like your ground zero for creating new stuff. If you don't want to just go play that at your next Troubadour gig, you know, just take a chance that people will like it if it's super out for like the normal shit that you do.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, again, like there's no one will ever tell you that you can't just do art for the sake of like doing art in yourself. But when you do perform it in front of people, like ticketed things, you know, you should give a shit what the audience thinks.
Yes. One big problem is that there are certain musicians in this gray area. So they want to make a living in music, but they also think that the audience is uneducated and naive to the intricacies happening in their music. And that's a super shitty way to look at this. You know, as a matter of fact, this kind of thinking will produce a fan base of only musicians or solely musicians, right? I mean, well, solely and only are the same thing. What the fuck am I talking about? It would be like, or mostly musicians. And this typically only works out if you're a high profile name. There are certain groups that have big musician followings, but you have to be probably someone that's pretty established already to even pull this off. That has made things that audiences also like probably in the past. So if you're doing some crazy art project that only musicians will listen to, it won't even be as commercially successful for a high profile name, but they may get plenty of musicians in the seats regardless. The majority of time, this is a big problem. You know why? Because in general, musicians have less stability due to the freelance nature of their jobs, and because if they buy less drinks at bars, they spend less money on products and merchandise, you know, and oftentimes they're gigging themselves and they can't make it to your show, or they just don't have enough money to go out and see you play. You know, I mean, it's expensive to go out, Jake, right? I mean, we've talked about it when we were in LA. It's like, do I want to go out and blow $80 right now?
Networking is expensive.
It's expensive.
And that's essentially what it is. A musician going to another musician's show is essentially networking. It's not ever fully like 100% I'm going to a show.
Yeah. I mean, you can, but you also want to see your friends and hang, and that's all part of the business.
Plus, like, you know, where we ended up with the music industry is essentially the only people paying for anything music related at this point are musicians.
Right.
We buy all the gear. We go to all the shows. It's just like, you know, that like you, the main goal, I think, what we should be attacking now at this point, since the music business is sort of dire, is like we need to get more audience, like non-musician people, if the, these art forms are going to stay alive. I mean, that's been a problem forever. I remember the BSO coming to my school when I was in college and like begging us. They were like, yeah, when the older generation dies, there's going to be no classical music. It'll just be gone because no one's going to pay $70 to go to a ticketed event to watch an orchestra because no one gives a shit. Like, that's like below the age of 50. And that's true, you know, and it's expensive to hire an orchestra because they are like 120 of the greatest musicians on planet Earth. So you can't just pay them a dollar.
No, like a paid union.
It's scale. Like, yeah, like all that stuff is just, you know, the main goal should always be let's get more people like interested in music and like teach them. There's ways to teach people music. They love music. They want to hear it. They want to listen to it. They want to go to shows. But if we keep going over their heads, they're not going to give a shit.
Yeah. And another thing you can do is do a little bit of research, right? So for instance, when you go to shows, well, first of all, go to a show, let's say of an artist that you really like that has a decent fan base, okay? So someone that you might think that is similar to the vibe you're going for, which is even more helpful. It doesn't have to be exactly the same. Maybe you're completely unique, but find something that is similar enough, go to the show, and start talking to people once you get there. And try to find some people, talk to everyone, be really social that night, you know? And find out why they like the music. Ask them specifically. You know, ask them. People like to talk about themselves and just start talking, you know. Ask them why they like to go and try to find some people that, did I say that? Try to find people that are non-musicians. I may have.
Yeah. But. I mean, and watch reactions. Like what during the show is like sparking the oh my God moments for all these people.
You know, maybe it's stage presence. Maybe it's the way they interact with the audience, a set list, whatever. It could be, you might get answers like they're fun and they don't look depressed like other jazz musicians. You know what I mean? Like you never know what they're going to say. But I remember I played Smoke Jazz Club for 7 years with this band called Hot Pants, which is a funk group. And Jeremy Manassia was in it, Ian Henderson Smith, Al Street, Joe Strasser, Dave Gibson, Adam Scone. And we would pack the place. It was fun, you know. We would pack the place every week, you know. And I would watch, and I was friends with the owner, so I would go all the time. And what I learned from all these years in these jazz clubs is that the people that made it a party, and, you know, this is jazz. It's, you know, and what we did was more funk, you know, but it's a jazz club. So when I'd see jazz gigs, the people that made it a party, it packed the place. And the energy was good. People were drinking more. And essentially, the club wants to book that person over and over again. The people that it looked like it was a thesis, you know, they were just sitting there, like, in their own worlds, playing something complicated, not giving a shit about the audience. Technically, you have some people there. It was kind of weird and stiff, and, you know, and I'm not saying you can't be complicated and do all this stuff, but you can't just be introverted. You have to share what you're doing with the audience. Like Jake said, it doesn't always have to be like an education in terms of you really being patronizing or educating an audience literally, but you have to share things with them. You talk to them.
If scientists can do it, musicians can do it. Like the boom. Yeah, like the boom of, you know, cosmologists and like these cats explaining some crazy shit. You don't dare ask them about the actual math because they'll fucking lose you in 1 second. But like they'll explain it where it makes sense. Like you can explain, you know, theory of fucking, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity. Like that stuff's easy to understand, but you're not supposed to do the math. Right. So like it's the same thing. Like, yeah, jazz and like some musics are very complicated. But like if you guide them into what actually feels good, like this shit feels good. Check this out. Yeah. You know, like you don't have to know the specifics, but it should feel good all the time.
And it's just like Jake said. I mean, it's exactly like that. Because I'm good at math, and I know Jake is, but I'm not a, you know, physicist. And yet I love to watch Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he's, you know, he's not explaining to me the algorithms that go into this or the equations that go into this. He's explaining the basic function of the universe in a way that I can understand it, and that makes it very, very interesting. It's very much like being in school and having a really bad history teacher, which makes it very, very difficult to stay awake. And then a really awesome history teacher who has all this fire and energy and really cool ways to relate. All of a sudden, you want to learn history. You know, this isn't necessarily about education as it is performance, but you have to kind of bring those things into your performance. If you think you're playing over the audience's head, then you have to figure out a way to explain. And I've seen great band leaders talk about what made the song up before the song starts, you know, things like that. They'll say, like, look, like, this came from this African rhythm that sounds like this. And then, you know, it's really cool. They played on this specific drum. And then what we did is we thought it would be so cool to integrate it with this. And you'll be able to hear it as we go along. So here we, you know, something like something, you know, but.
Dude, even you know like what I mean? Seth MacFarlane does that on with his big band.
Right.
And again, like, that's crooner stuff. And people love crooner singers. Like, that shit's awesome. Everyone loves, you know, a good Sinatra fucking piece. But like, he would actually talk about the arranger. Because like, he's obsessed with arrangers, and he happens to have like one of the greatest bands fucking ever.
Well, Ron Jones was doing that.
He was
arranging that stuff for him.
It's just, he'd just be sitting there with his whiskey, and he'd be like, yeah, this is one of my favorite arrangements of this tune. It's from this dude, this time in history. This is what was going on. This is what he did differently. And everyone's all of a sudden like, what's arranging? Like, I don't even know that was a thing. Oh, you actually like arranged the horns and how the verse and choruses work, and like, they just learned a shit ton of stuff, and then they get to listen to crooning, you know.
But again,
everyone's happy.
But again, he's presenting that this music in a way where he wants the audience to understand why it's so special to him. Yeah. And I think that's where we're going with this, now that we're kind of getting in the heart of it, is that explain to the audience why you're so passionate about it, if it's too complicated just to understand. Because the truth is, if you were just to see the scientific paper about the singularity in a black hole, you'd be like, what the fuck? Because it's just the conclusion of a bunch of research that went into how this thing works. And it's only a theory anyway. But if you have someone explaining to you all the different ways about, you know, how they thought this was happening, and, you know, what the theories are, and kind of feeding it into this final story, you get into the end of this, you can have a better idea of where you are by the end. And with a musician, I think it's similar. You know, you have this huge creative process about songwriting or why you're doing something a certain way, and leaving the audience in the dust isn't always the best thing to do. You know,
it doesn't even have to be because it's complicated.
No.
Fuck. I remember a friend being like, I asked them if they listened to Sarah Bareilles, and they were like, no. They're like, it's pop music. Like, I heard that song, Love Song. It's just poppy bullshit. And I was like, really? I was like, actually, that song was written because the record label was putting pressure on her to write a love song so that they'd have a hit. Otherwise, they'd drop her because her music is not hit-oriented. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to that song with that perspective, being like, you know, listen to the lyrics, and you start to realize, holy shit, this song is like a fucking, like, rebel. It's a total rebel fucking punk song. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, I kind of like this girl, Sarah. And then you listen to her records and you're like, holy fuck, this shit's awesome. Like, bam, you just change someone's complete world with a tiny bit of explanation. Like, it changes shit.
All the great songwriters, if you see them play live, they will tell you the story of how a song came to be before you get into it. They bring you into their world. And like, that is what makes live music so beautiful. When you're talking about instrumental music, you don't always have words. And if you do, sometimes they're words that are very old. You know, oftentimes people are singing standards in jazz. And in that case, you know, it's not about what the song means. or meant, it's what it means to you, like what that how that relates to something new. So you can make that song not only your own, but you can explain why you chose to play that, because maybe you felt a similar heartbreak or you felt a similar thing. Singers talk about this stuff all the time, and singers are the best typically at bringing audiences in because they're just so good at that, you know. But if you're just an instrumental group, you have to take a page from their book and learn from the masters. And you don't have to do things that are watered down or that are not you. But you have to figure out how to bring the audience in, because if you lose the audience, you lost everything. You lost the gig. Yeah.
Plus, people forget, like when they get mad for people, again, always picking on jazz. But like, yeah, we play standards and then we like blow over changes. And that seems to be the more important part for most musicians. But like, why would an audience care about that? First of all, when this shit started, when it came off, like coming out of classical, modern classical into like big band, into swing and all that stuff, like they were using songs that were literally the fucking top 10.
Oh, it was dance.
So they were using, they were using all the most popular melodies, choruses. Like, mind you, they would take the chorus of the most famous tune and then they would play that shit. And like, so people will listen, like that was their way in to play like quote unquote more complicated music for people, and people would listen and they dance and stuff like that. And then it got into, you know, bop and all that stuff. But like that shit, they had a ground for it. People already liked the song. Now, years later, we're still playing those same songs. Nobody fucking knows those melodies. No one cares. Like, why would anyone care about All the Things You Are at a fucking club in New York in 2020, you know? And you're just going to blow over changes and be mad that people are, like, not into it. It's like, you know, like, artists like, again, like Brad Meldow, obviously, do, like, Radiohead tunes. People are like, oh, I know this melody. Mm-hmm. Cool. And they'd sit there and they'd listen to it. They don't know what the fuck he's doing. God, the guy's a genius. But they'd like it because he would come back to a familiar melody, and like maybe he would spark like this thing in some people that normally would not listen to jazz. That's the thing. It's just like everyone has a way in. If you look at anyone that's famous or like has a big audience, there's always a way in to the audience. Like they actually do care about what the audience thinks.
Yeah. And I mean, and to play devil's advocate, it's not necessarily, none of this means don't play the classic American songbook. You know, those songs are beautiful, but they have to be more than just a standard that's in a real book. They have to be something that means something to you. So if you do specifically like a song like Beautiful Love, or I don't know, whatever, you know, Have You Met Miss Jones or something, there should be a reason that you really like it. It's something about how the melody turns, or the bridge, or the words, hopefully, or something, so that you can actually put not only your spin on it, but maybe even tell the audience before you play, like why you love the song so much, and tell them why it's special. And that kind of input on a gig is much better than, all right, that the next tune is a tune by Thelonious Monk. You know, it's just like, and then just playing it and then be like, okay, thank you.
You are now that history teacher. That
no one thank liked. You very much, Bueller. The next tune we will play is All the Things You Are in 7. Thank you. You know,
I still can't, I think it was Mincer that said that shit in one of the master classes. He was like, no one wants to hear all the things you worked on in the practice room.
He said, they want to hear all the things you are, not all the things you worked on in the practice room. Yeah. Bob Mincer.
I think it was him.
It was. No, I remember.
Yeah.
But I guess the point is that there are a lot of ways to engage your audience. You don't have to water yourself down, but don't. I feel like when people say, well, I'm just an artist, there's two ways it could go. Someone could literally just not give a shit, which is kind of rare, and just be an artist and really not care about making money, and that's a beautiful thing. But most of the time, or I don't know if most, but maybe half the time, it's not about that. It's kind of like this, I don't know, a fear of change, or a fear, it's like a fear of trying to get the audience on your side? I think because it's difficult. It's not easy work for some people. Some people aren't that good with people. And I think that people get stressed out and they have fear and pushback and resistance. Resistance is the word I'm looking for. They have this resistance to like trying to get an audience involved. And so they're just like, oh no, fuck them. You know, I don't care about what they think. You know, I think it's easier to say that. Is I guess that's what I'm trying to say with this long-winded response, you know?
And in some cases, if that's how you need to work, then do it. But again, then don't complain that no one likes your shit.
Right.
Because some people definitely have just been like, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. And then all of a sudden they're Tom York, and that's fine.
Totally.
But that's Tom York.
Yeah. You
know, that's how it worked for him.
Yeah. Like,
and you would know if that shit's working or not.
Yeah. I mean, and John Cage was like a punk rock musician for, I mean, he wrote stuff that I would never listen to. And, you know, I love modern classical music, but he wrote a piece that most people know that where he didn't play anything. You know, what is it called? Something in 25 seconds or something?
I think 419.
Yeah, 419 or something.
And like that.
It's literally, he just went to a piano. And this is for people who don't know. Maybe there's some listeners that don't know this.
I mean, it's an intellectual exercise.
Yeah, and
essentially,
it's an intellectual exercise. So he goes to the piano and he sits there and he doesn't play anything for that amount of time. 419, let's say it is. Yeah. And the piece is the uncomfortable noises of the crowd, basically. Like, you know, there's no music.
I played a Cage piece where we all had specific radio stations to dial, and we stood all in different spots in this huge area. And so, like, it was pretty fucking cool. It was a great experience. Like, everyone had, like, their paper of, like, what radio stations to use when. It was, like, a notated thing. So everybody was just on radios, like, turning dials. It was awesome. But, like, I'm not going to fucking throw that on in my car when I break up with some girl.
Right. Right. That's almost like performance art.
Fucking kill a bunch of people after.
John Cage made me. No. But the point being is you can be an artist. You can do crazy performance art. You can do crazy shit. And like, I think that's amazing. I think that you can express yourself and you can be all that you want to be and do all this stuff. But, you know, making a living and doing that are separate. So if you want to combine the two, this is how you do it, you know? And I think we probably said enough in this. Oh, I do want to say one more thing. It is time to vote. And I know this isn't a political show, but please vote if you're in the U.S. because it's important. And I know that we have an electoral college and, people, and we only have two parties that really kind of matter, you know, two party system. There are independent parties, but it's really, really hard to get elected that way. I know our political system isn't perfect, but your vote really matters. And
plus, if you vote, then you could always say you went to college.
Oh, Jesus, that's terrible. But please vote because it's important. If you don't like how things are going and you want to change, then make the change. Otherwise, you can't complain about it.
Make that change.
All right. Later. Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail. You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So, look forward to hearing from you.